This is Columbia Morning on News Talk 1400 KFRU, and we're always pleased to have our regular visit with the city manager for Columbia, and he's Mike Mathis, and he's in the studio with me. Good to see you. How are you?
Good. Good to be here.
I said that you didn't look much worse for the wear over the last 2 weeks, so it looks like you're holding up pretty well.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
I like this in regard to the fact that when something happens that is controversial, and I think anybody who's listening to us right now knows that some people have reacted in certain ways to a speech that you gave, I think, 2 weeks ago this morning. I think it was a Columbia Values Diversity breakfast on January the 11th.
That's right.
I think we have to think. Would you say that if you're looking for positives from this, that this is one thing that it can make our community do, is to think pretty hard about a very difficult subject?
Absolutely. You know, we have to talk about our history and our history around racism, and or we're never going to get better. We're never going to climb out of this. And I do think over time, justice occurs, things do get better, but we're not out of the woods yet. There's a lot more work to do. And the point of the breakfast is a celebration, right? And so we were celebrating some terrific news. We have made terrific progress as a community. But it's not over. It's not done. And the thing we're most proud of, 4 years ago, the city woke up to the impacts of poverty in the community. And we realized there was a gap based on race, and the effects of poverty were far more impactful in the African-American community. So we had to focus on that to create an equality in our town, an inclusiveness in our ability to thrive. So we've been able to do that. We partnered with a lot of nonprofits, the schools, and we have together helped reduce the African-American unemployment rate by half. We're at a rate that we've never seen in our history. It's 8% for African-Americans in Columbia. So the speech I gave was to call on those who do make hiring decisions to think about hiring local, hire our folks from our neighborhoods, and they can help us drive that even lower.
What you have just said has been one of the focuses that you have included in your State of the City address, I know, over the last several years. I can't remember which first time you did this, but you made it as one of your points is we're going to close that gap of unemployment.
That's right. I've been speaking about it for about 4 years, and I know some folks are tired of talking about it, but it's so important, and it's still a focus of the city government, a primary policy outcome we're shooting for.
It says in the Missourian today that in a statement that you have received positive feedback from many because of the need to see how that presentation resonated with people. And it says here, grateful for significant positive feedback from the diversity breakfast from Kevin Powell and Mary Ratliff. Could you give any details about kind of how they reacted and what they have said to you?
Well, you know, we do record these, and if anyone would like to watch it, I'd encourage you to do that. You can go to our website, como.gov, and just search for City Channel, and it's the first video that comes up, and watch the keynote speaker, Kevin Powell. I'm very gratified by his comments. He pointed out that, you know, he's been a well-known speaker. He's been doing speaking at ML King Day events for 20 years, and he said, in his words, he's never seen a city make this kind of progress and have these specific, I asked folks to do three things to help us. And he said, I've never seen any city have specific strategic action steps that you can do to help close the gap. So that was high praise. He mentioned that about three times in his speech. And I took that as a very positive, and I was very gratified to hear that. And of course, a lot of Mary Ratliff's reached out to me two times. And
Since the speech.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she has, you know, and she represents quite a bit of the community, black and white. And so it's gratifying to have her support.
Did she give advice? Did she give, well, this worked well, this did not work well, critique? I don't know what she would have said.
She said that she understood what I was going for, and that she appreciated the courage it took to talk about it. Most white people are silent on this subject, you know, and she said that it takes courage to do it, and it was healing and meaningful for her to hear those things.
I have heard from people who were there, and I've heard also from people who I don't think were there, And when this started to churn, I said, I have to watch it. I think your speech lasted about 10 minutes. I think it's 10 minutes of that breakfast. So I watched that. Now, while I didn't feel like there was anything there that raised huge alarms of, well, this seemed inappropriate, or this seemed inconsiderate, or this seemed tone deaf, I then said, how could I look at this? I can't look at it through any other eyes, but I tried to say, if I could possibly think of this through somebody else's eyes who had a different experience than I did, how would I see that it might make me feel uncomfortable? And I think, I don't know, is it the pictures? Is it the pictures of two different settings for the five people that were used in the example early on in that speech? Is that the biggest thing that people are referring to when you think that they are criticizing the speech?
I've talked to a couple folks, Nikki Magruder and Tara Warnick-Griggs, about their reaction. They were not pleased by the speech, and so I certainly did inadvertently offend them. And they helped me learn what it was they disagreed with and took offense to, and it was really how I said the message. So they agreed with the message, they told me. They agreed with the content. But they wished I hadn't said it the way I had.
But not the words, just the overall presentation. Because I want to learn from this, because I am a mm-hmm. white guy, and I might say something, or I might be in a conversation with someone, and I'm thinking, how can I appreciate someone else's legitimate perspective when it doesn't match mine?
Right, and we have to have continued conversations about that. And so I really feel the best thing we can do is take courage and actually have the conversation. And we're going to have things that this is like a Thanksgiving family conversation. There are topics we all try to avoid at Thanksgiving, right? Politics, religion, but we've got to talk about this race issue. And we've got to talk about bias. And that was my point about bias, is that that's, in my view, one of our biggest obstacles to reducing black unemployment. I tried to deflect what I know is a difficult conversation by focusing on me and my journey. And, you know, the words I chose, I think some folks took personally, and that's certainly not my intent. I was talking about me, of course. And, you know, all I can do is say I didn't say those to offend anyone, but we have to talk about these sensitive subjects.
I think by saying you were talking about your experience, was it because some who had a problem with that realized that there are many who have shared the experience that you were talking about? I mean, that's one of the reasons people use examples of themselves, is because they know that it resonates with a lot of people.
That's right. And it keeps the acrimony out a lot, you know, because I'm not pointing at anybody else. I'm just saying this is my journey, and here's what I've lived and learned from. And, you know, that bias exists. I think about that famous study that has been done and redone, where they sent resumes to the same companies. And all they did, exact same resume, all they did was change the name on the top. And the African-sounding names didn't get calls, you know, at nearly the rate that, you know, Brian and Julie got. But Jamal and Letitia didn't get the calls. And that's the kind of bias we've got to recognize in ourselves and stop doing.
Would those who criticize from perhaps the black community just say, again, I'm trying to process this, are they angry because, sadly, that's the reality that they have to face from those who aren't aware of what strides need to be made? In other words, there are some who would express certain opinions and never see their error in expressing those opinions.
Yes, absolutely. I've had folks say that very thing to me. And I should stress, you know, the vast majority of the feedback I've received is very positive, very grateful that I've had, you know, the time and the platform to start a conversation about this. Or not start, but continue, mm-hmm. add to. And so there, but, you know, for those that don't feel positive about it, I certainly I have an open door, and I want them to help me learn how to avoid that conversation if it does create those sort of reactions.
So what will they say moving forward? What would they if they've come to you and said, wow, you really bombed this one. This one didn't go like you thought it went because here's what I heard. So they can express that. I think anger is fine as long as it is respectful anger. And I'm sure that you've received some respectful anger and disrespectful yes. anger. I would imagine it had been both.
But, always.
But yeah. then what next? What would be the suggestions from those who were hurt by that event? What do they say we want now?
Nikki Magruder had a very positive course laid out. She is working with a lot of others, namely the University of Missouri, to lay out this framework that we're all sort of working toward. But she told me she's working on an experience, a seminar, a lecture, I guess, about code switching is the term she used, code switching. And I think that's a way to say using appropriate language for your audience, And so I'll be interested in hearing more about that concept.
Kind of interesting, is it not? Because many have referred to the fact that you have given that kind of presentation at many places. But then again, yes. It's the audience that I think was the difference this time.
I guess so. I was a little shocked by this reaction from a part of the group because I have given it for the past year to groups that were very diverse. In fact, developed it in partnership with representatives from the Black community, ran it by them before I even took it public. Took all of their advice and altered the speech at that time. I've given it to probably every Rotary and Cosmo Club and Optimist Club and of course the Chamber, standing ovations at previous speeches. So it was a surprise to me to hear folks be offended, but I understand.
I'll ask this question. I don't know if there's what the answer is to this question, but as you look back on the overall message, again, that you have given many times, what is false about that message?
I don't believe there's anything false about it. I am meticulously stick to the facts, and I can support every concept, every statement in that speech with volumes of data.
Recap for us, because I expressed to someone after I watched the speech, I said, he basic thing was he led up to three, and you said that Kevin McDonald went to, or Kevin Powell, excuse me, he referenced those also, but I can't remember all three of those right now. One was to hire local people, and another one was to support the CARE program.
That's right.
I can't remember the third one.
The third one's really exciting. It's really the work that Anthony Stanton started with Tyree Bindham, and then Jim Witt's now refined, and it's this database we have on our website. So you can shop local too. You can support local businesses that are disadvantaged, and for the longest time you'd have that conversation, and people would say, well, I don't know even who those businesses are, and the truth is the city didn't know either. But we do now, because we took the time to do the work. Anthony helped us. He created that list with Tyree, and then we've now updated it. And Jim's taken it even farther. He's put it online. It's a searchable database, and now the companies can update their information on their own. So it's a beautiful thing to be able to pop on there and say, well, I got to get my sidewalk fixed. Maybe I'll do something to make the world a little fairer place, and I'll reach out and try a disadvantaged business.
Would we be, do you think, in your opinion or perspective, surprised by the number or lack of number of minority-owned businesses in this community?
I've had both reactions. The most common one I have is I didn't know there were this many folks in business. And so that's the primary reaction.
So I guess how has this impeded other things you wanted to be doing the last 2 weeks? And I know you didn't want to spend 20 minutes on this conversation in this segment, but what's next? What moves us forward? What other conversations will occur, or what will be next?
It's turned out, I think, into a blessing. I've been saying we've got to have this conversation. Well, it certainly forced me to have this conversation. And I think it's great because we can start talking about and admitting that there's bias in the world. And if we can address it, we can make it a much better place. And the proof's in the pudding. We can point to the data. We've done it. We've cut the African-American unemployment rate in half in 4 years. That's astounding.
I think that the reactions that have been thoughtful have been good. I think people have said, you know, maybe this didn't work, but this does work. And I think, do you feel like you said 95% have been in a positive way? You feel like you've gotten a lot of constructive reaction to this?
Yes, the overwhelming amount of feedback's been very positive.
Have those who have come and said, this didn't work like you wanted it to work, have they asked for specific, other than an apology, if that's what they asked for? I'm not asking that. I'm saying, have they asked for specific next steps?
Well, I did take detailed notes for my meeting with Tara and Nikki, and they had a number of things that were, I think, helpful. And so, you know, at this point, actually, I've done the speech for a year. That was going to be the last one. So it has continued the conversation, but I can certainly refine the messages as we move forward, because we're going to be talking about it more. We're not done with the work.
You want to say anything before we move on? I like what you said as the third point, which I had forgotten, which is know what the minority-owned businesses are and do work with the minority-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. Hire people local, people who may, you may say, well, I would never have considered them unless somebody had asked me to consider them. The CARE program also, I think, is something very important, because I know that you've spoken about that before and a lot. You want to say one word about that before we move on?
It's an incredibly successful program, a 99% success rate with the folks that come into CARE. These are, CARE stands for Career Awareness Related Experience. I think we had to get it to spell CARE. Mm-hmm. But it's really, you know, you can't get a job without experience, right? So we go the extra mile to give young folks, teenagers, experience. And so we pay the salary. We place them in local businesses. And nonprofits, and we put some in the city government too. And while we pay the salary, we have job coaches, and so we help folks learn how to be good employees, how to develop that work ethic. And that part of that speech, where I get to that, that's where I talk about my own 14-year-old self, where you know, I came up at a time when you know, families had one bath a week. Now, that sounds...
I know,
our
I remember
changed.
That. Yeah, it has. Yeah.
And that sounds disgusting now, right? But certainly take a bath every day now. But so that was my point at that is, you know, these are the fundamental things they cover, from soup to nuts, to teach, get kids so they're successful in the workplace. And many kids don't need much coaching, you know. In fact, some need none. They just need an opportunity. And it's, you know, every racial demographic, every gender is represented in the program. It's not targeted for any specific group. Anyone can participate. And the problem we have is our money runs out at about 187 students, and we have almost 500 apply each year. So that message was, hey, there's a way we can help right here. If you want to sponsor a student, it's only $1,500 a summer, and, you know, a lot of folks, so I've given that speech over the course of the year. Two times I've had someone walk up and hand me a check.
How about that?
Yeah.
Ron Schmidt is the head of the CARE program. He has been a regular guest on our Parks and Rec show on the weekends, and so I feel very familiar with what you're talking about and familiar with the conversation with Ron Schmidt. Let's move on to something else before we're totally out of time. February 5th, there will be public opportunity to talk about what, community policing? Am I off on that? Is that right?
No, that's absolutely right.
How do you think that maybe some of what's happened over the last couple of weeks might feed into that? Because I think that people will probably take that as an opportunity to address ongoing concerns that they have as far as treatment of racial minorities in this community by law enforcement. How do you think that these things might dovetail, and should they dovetail?
They should dovetail. It's absolutely part of our lived experience. And, you know, we're doing community policing in three specific neighborhoods. We're expanding to a fourth. thanks to a grant we've received. And it's such a powerful service. We announced about a year ago, we had our first year's worth of data. And across the board, calls for service and crimes dropped on every category where we have community policing. So we know what we're doing with that service, and it works, and it's a powerful, powerful thing. Our struggle is we just can't afford to do it in very many places.
Something may show up to help to raise the funds to do that?
Well, I think, you know, in any meaningful way, I can't imagine anything other than a ballot being able to solve that problem. Now, that's the, you know, the conversation we've been having for quite some time. But I think this will help the whole community think through what we want. And, you know, the community and folks have said, and rightly so, the community needs to decide what community policing is. Now, we've shown one model, but we actually use about three other models right now today. If you think about school resource officers and the downtown unit, those are models of community policing as well. So, you know, we're going to explore that as a community, and at the end of that, we'll come up with a plan that, that as council has asked, will take that community policing service citywide and what resources will be needed to do that.
We have only a minute or two left. Any word on the FAA and anything coming from them as far as the airport and the new terminal is concerned?
Well, we've got a green light to start the process, so we have. Our focus now is to do the environmental analysis. There's a short way to do that, and we're taking that route because we would love to get the design work started this year.
And are they saying in the location of where the current hangar is or in the location that's closer to Route H?
Thank you for asking that. So we have two locations. We've really been focused on the Greenfield site near Route H. But frankly, after we looked at everything, the location that's immediately adjacent to the current terminal to the south there just leapt out as a much better choice because not only does it save about $10 million, it saves us about a year and a half of waiting for the environmental clearance. So a year and a half sooner, $10 million cheaper. We like that.
And so, FAA says that's the one to work on?
They're totally supportive of that. And now they'll go either way that we want to go. But, you know, we'll have the exact same terminal we would have built on the north here, exact same terminal, same gates. It'll be beautiful. But, you know, we are Missourians. It won't be lavish. Mm-hmm. Well, by beautiful, I mean it'll have two floors. We'll have jetways and be able to load more planes quickly.
So it sounds like the FAA is saying go ahead with the environmental impact study, send that to us, and then we'll sign off on it for the next step.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. There are steps along the way, aren't there?
Always.
Well, I appreciate your visit today. I really appreciate, I think, thoughtful people who give some input and also who think through this know that it's a tough subject. I mean, obviously it is. Talking about the racial diversity and treatment and inequalities in this community. But there is good news within the I guess the clamor that occurred afterwards.
There
right?
is, yeah. We're getting better and better.
I thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you.
City Manager Mike Mathis has been our guest. This is KFRU.